This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's certainly no secret that nearly all politicians prefer some media outlets to others. And it's no secret that the president hates nearly all of the media, with one big exception. Donald Trump loves Fox News, and he tweets its praises all the time. But something big and something quite rare in modern times happened between Fox and the president during the midterm campaign.
Sean Hannity, come on up. Sean Hannity.
Hannity appeared at a rally not as an observer, not as a commentator, but as a speaker on the podium for the president.
I did an opening monologue today, and I had no idea you were going to invite me up here. And the one thing that has made and defined your presidency more than anything else, promises made, promises kept.
It seems the president trusts Sean Hannity and others on the Fox News evening lineup more than he trusts his own advisors. Jane Mayer has been reporting for us on how this unique relationship came about. I spoke with Jane last week, and days later, we got an important update. White House Deputy Chief of Staff and former head of Fox, Bill Shine, resigned from the White House, and he's going to work on Trump's 2020 campaign. That just happened on Friday. Here's my conversation with Jane Mayer. Jane, you've described a relationship between Fox News and the Trump administration that goes well beyond mutual admiration. You say there's a significant coordination happening there. What do you mean by that?
Well, I set out to try to figure out what was going on with this because Bill Shine, who used to be a president of Fox News, had been appointed to be a deputy chief of staff to Trump and director of White House communications. And so he had the prominent job in the White House over the president's message. You know, how does that work? And tried to kind of dig beneath the surface there. And what I found was there are layer after layer after layer of interlocking connections between the White House and 21st Century Fox. So I was trying to figure out who sets the tune, who, you know, that everybody plays during the course of the day. If the news on Fox is all about some kind of caravan, supposedly, of immigrants invading America, whose idea is that? And it turns out it just is this continual feedback loop back and forth because the most prominent and well-paid and highest-rated opinion host on Fox is Sean Hannity, and he's on the phone virtually every night after his show, he has told people, with President Trump. There's a message coordination that I've never seen in other White Houses. And, you know, I go back to having covered Reagan and other people who've been studying presidencies, historians and political scientists. They say that this is new.
Well, Ben Bradley, who went on to be the great editor of the Watergate era, when he was at Newsweek, was best friends with John F. Kennedy. At the 1960 Democratic Convention, Phil Gramm, the owner of the Washington Post, brokered the relationship and the nomination of Lyndon Johnson as vice president to John Kennedy. Walter Lippmann, the great newspaper columnist and pundit, saw it as his role to advise presidents at a certain point in history. What's the difference now?
Well, what we've got here is the single largest cable television network in America. It's not just a single evening of brokering a convention or a visit behind the scenes with the president, as Ben Bradley did, or going horseback riding with him or whatever they did. This is like a daily operation. And so it's become an arm of the White House. That's what's really different.
The interesting thing in your piece is that the relationship was not always like this. What's the history of this relationship and how did it evolve?
Yeah, it was interesting. There's a much more than I knew before getting into this, a kind of a rocky start to this romance. Basically, Rupert Murdoch had known Trump for decades, going back to when he bought the New York Post. They were introduced to each other by Roy Cohn. And they had a kind of a symbiotic business relationship from the start. Trump could get publicity for his celebrity sort of antics, and Rupert Murdoch could sell papers.
But isn't it true that Rupert Murdoch considered Donald Trump a sleazy businessman?
That is what I'm told by people who know Murdoch well. They thought he was sort of a shady casino operator and kind of a con artist. So when you finally get to the point of 2016 and Trump is running for real for the White House, Rupert Murdoch was very tough on him. His newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, described it as a catastrophe for the Republican Party and for the country to have Trump running. And Rupert Murdoch personally tweeted against Trump on the issue of immigration. So what interested me was, how do you get from there to the point where every night almost, the hosts that are reaching a huge swath of America are trashing immigrants and scaring people about immigration? And you've got this, you know, Fox is the chairman of the company is Rupert Murdoch, an immigrant himself from Australia who thinks immigration is a good thing. And so I was curious, you know, how does he square that? And I interviewed a lot of people, and one of them on the record, Greta Van Susteren, who used to be a host of a show at CNN and then at Fox and MSNBC. So she's seen them all. She said, don't kid yourself. What he cares about is the bottom line. And they are minting money by whipping up fear.
Now, one of the central figures in all of this, as you said, is Bill Shine, who's a former co-president of Fox News, currently White House Director of Communications and Deputy Chief of Staff. Now, you lay out at great length Bill Shine's history at Fox and his relationship with Roger Ailes, who was the kind of mind and executive for so many years behind Fox News and then was forced out on charges of sexual harassment. What was the relationship between Shine and Ailes, and what was their argument when it had to do with Trump?
Well, so Shine was the deputy to Roger Ailes. He'd come into Fox basically as the producer for Sean Hannity. He and Sean Hannity are best friends. Their families are very, very close. And he kind of rode Hannity's coattails and worked his way up at Fox. His critics say he was an enabler, a gopher, somebody who covered up the endless numbers of sexual harassment accusations that were lodged against Roger Ailes. Shine has said he refused to talk to us. He's not talking to anybody really in the press, but he had said through a spokesman that he didn't know anything about the sexual harassment charges against Ailes.
Is that possibly true?
It's, you know, if it is possibly true, I mean, almost anything's possibly true. It is true that Roger Ailes was a very secretive, paranoid man, but it kind of stretches credulity in many ways because, among other things, I have a document, which is Bill Shine signing a $3.15 million agreement with one of the women who was sexually harassed by Roger Ailes.
This is the booker named Lori Lunn.
Her name is Lori Loon, and you have to wonder, what did Bill Shine think was going on that they were paying this woman $3.15 million to stay quiet and go away?
Jane, you have one source that said that Shine would do this. He would talk to the women with a kind of velvet glove approach, saying, don't worry about it, these allegations of sexual misconduct. And if that didn't work, he'd warn her that it would ruin her career.
That's the quote in the story, and I have to say that's only one quote I heard like this. There were so many people and so many women I talked to who have in the past worked at Fox who said there was almost like a routine, a system. You would complain to your supervisor, then you would complain on up the structure till Bill Shine, who would kind of tell you, oh, it's no big deal, just forget about it. And then eventually it would become, you know, it's not going to be good for you to make a big fuss over this. And they would even call the agents sometimes.
Well, it seems quite incredible that the White House then, that Donald Trump then would take the risk of appointing Shine director of communications and deputy chief of staff, knowing that this was going on at Fox News. How can that help him?
Well, I mean, and even beyond that, this behavior of Bill Shine's and Roger Ailes was the subject of a criminal investigation by the U.S. attorney in New York, which was looking into payoffs by Fox to silence the women and efforts to intimidate the women. How did this happen that he wound up in the White House? Sean Hannity put him there. Sean Hannity introduced him to President Trump, arranged a private dinner, and pushed very hard to get him into the White House.
Jen, you seem to imply, and you say it straight out in a way, that the President of the United States is getting a great deal of his information from Fox, maybe even more than the information he's getting from his own intelligence agencies.
Well, this is what his own advisors tell me. A number of them suggested that if you want to try to reach President Trump, the best thing to do is get on Fox News. So even though he's got his advisors right there around him in the Oval Office, that he respects the people that he sees on television. There's a Senate aide, for instance, who's interviewed in the story, who talks about how a very prominent Republican senator, whose name I know, but I'm not allowed to say in the middle of the story because he didn't want to be identified. But when he wants to reach President Trump, he calls up Fox News, asks one of the friendly hosts to put him on. He goes on, makes his points, and he says by the time that he's getting his makeup off in the green room afterwards, the phone is ringing and it's President Trump.
Now, Jen, you've got some startling things in this story. One of them is that a FoxNews.com reporter had the Stormy Daniels story solid before the election. What happened?
So this was really interesting to me because you begin to see how Fox begins to really take the side of Trump. And one of the most important things that I hadn't known was that they had the Stormy Daniels story. A young reporter named Diana Falzone had it. And she had been working on it since March 2016. By October 2016, so right before the election, she was trying very hard to get this on the air. And she'd seen emails back and forth between Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, and the people representing Stormy Daniels, the porn actress with whom Trump had allegedly had an affair. And she'd seen the contract between them for hush money. And she also realized at a certain point, it appears, that there was a catch-and-kill thing going on with the National Enquirer, where they were silencing the woman by buying her story and killing it. And so she was, this young reporter for Fox was pushing this, and she kept getting kind of the runaround. Finally, she reached the top editor for the website, a man named Ken LaCourte. And according to what she told her colleagues, and I've checked this with them, she said that his answer was, good reporting, kiddo. But he said, you know, Rupert Murdoch wants Donald Trump to win. So just set it aside.
So just died. Killed the story in a sense.
They killed it. They shelved it. Yeah. Let's just say, for fairness, Ken LaCourte has denied that ever saying that. He agrees he killed the story, but he claims he didn't say that.
Another piece of information that you've got that's remarkable to me. You focus on the Justice Department's attempt to block AT&T from purchasing CNN's parent company, Time Warner. How did this play out within the Trump White House? Describe the scene. What happened?
So this is a scene that takes place in the Oval Office in the late summer of 2017. Gary Cohn is there with the White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly.
Gary Cohn, the economic advisor to President Trump at that time.
That's right. And Trump is just really exasperated with Cohn. He says to Kelly, who's just become his chief of staff, I've told him 50 times to block that deal. I want him to call the Justice Department and get them to file suit. It's time to block that deal. We know that Trump was opposed to this deal because it was very good for CNN, basically. He's made that much clear in public statements. But he promised the public that he was not going to intervene. It would be very improper for a president to try to put his thumb on the scale of justice in such a situation to help a friend and hurt a foe. But what we found out is that, in fact, he ordered his top economic advisor to do just that.
Now, he was acting also in the interest of Rupert Murdoch. Why would that be?
Well, because Rupert Murdoch was the rival to Time Warner, which owns CNN. Rupert Murdoch's company doesn't want to see Time Warner become more powerful by allying itself with a huge company like AT&T, you know, and so he wanted to see it blocked as well, I would assume. But I've got to say, Murdoch's people declined to speak on the record to us about it.
Rupert Murdoch is not a young man. He's in his late 80s. It's known that his children are not wild about certain aspects, certainly, of Fox News, except for the aspect that it makes billions of dollars a year in profit. What do you expect will happen to Fox News when Rupert Murdoch is gone?
Well, it's a great question. I don't have the answer. I think it's going to hang on Lachlan Murdoch, probably. He's the son, the oldest son of Rupert, who is going to be the top person overseeing Fox News with his father. And he shares his dad's politics. I think he's quite conservative. But I have heard that people at Fox seem to think that maybe he'll make it slightly more center-right. James Murdoch, who's much more of a political independent, is not going to be involved. He has sort of opted out of all of this. And the thing is, it makes so much money like this for them. I'm just not sure they're going to want to do anything that hurts the golden goose.
How are the Trump presidency and the future of Fox News linked to each other? How do you expect to see the campaign covered?
Well, I mean, one thing that is a danger for Trump is that the Fox base viewership needs to be enraged in order to keep the business model working. But it's not necessarily great for Trump to only reach those people. He can get cornered by his own allies, and it's happened before. It happened on the budget deals, where he wound up, in an effort to sort of please Fox, he wound up doing things that really hurt his own popularity. And that could happen again in the campaign. He may find it hard to broaden the base the way he needs to get reelected if he's only narrowcasting his message to the most extreme people who are just watching Fox.
It's a remarkable piece of reporting. Jane Mayer, thank you so much.
Thanks, David.
You can find Jane Mayer's reporting on Fox News and the Trump administration at NewYorker.com. I reached her in Washington.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.